Welcome to Spraymakers, the podcast that dives deep into the world of slalom with Rossi and Trent. This week, the guys talk through the steps involved to take your skiing up to the next level.
I encountered too many skiers that feel helpless. You know, feel like I've been stuck in the same place forever. I'm probably not going to get any better. And I mean, obviously that's a self-fulfilling prophecy, but I think what people need to realize is that breakthroughs come, they come at different times for different skiers, you know, and not everyone runs this super linear progression where, you know, won their first national title at 10, won their junior world title at 13, then won a junior master's title at 17, and then won the master's at 21. Like, it's not everyone goes through that perfect, that seamless progression through the whole thing. People break through barriers at different times. So I think, like, my hope in this was Rossi, is as I think, you know, reflecting on our episodes, I think the most underutilized aspect that you know, this dichotomy, you and I, the most underutilized aspect of this relationship is, I mean, you flat out became one of the very best skiers in the history of the sport. And you, I mean, you weren't a junior phenom. So I guess that old adage, and I'm running on here, sorry, I'm going to turn this over to you, but that whole thing, you know, is like, you know, if I can do it, anyone can do it. Well, that holds true. You know in thinking about that, like, Rossi, was there ever a point in your junior career where you were, you know, maybe seeing people around you getting better at a better rate than you, or ever seem like there was this insurmountable ground you had to cover if you were ever going to catch up to these guys? You know, I just kind of want to explore this, just, you know, breaking through barriers and how it happens on your own time.
Oh my goodness, my man. I mean,
sorry.
No. I just meant like the amount of lead up right there was awesome, really, because I think that really kind of just talks a little bit more about what these levels are, or, you know, I think a lot of times we talk about them in plateaus. And yeah. I've seen many plateaus, and every plateau is a challenge. And that's actually kind of what I look at as kind of the game. It's the Rubik's Cube of the whole deal. Like, if you get stuck someplace, then everybody does. So this is not like, I mean, I did not just call somebody out or anything like that. Like, we all get stuck. And then what I believe is, when you're stuck at a level, there's something that you haven't figured out that you needed, your next, you know, door to unlock. You haven't actually unlocked it. And sometimes that just means that you need to work with a coach and work with that to, you know, to give you that little tidbit. But other times it may be yourself that's holding that back. And I also think that you know, really what you're, the summation, and you've actually used this word before, the summation that you're talking about is, what are these light bulb moments that help you to take that next step? And then all of a sudden, the crazy part is when you unlock that weakest link. That's the way I look at it. Like, you're stuck because you haven't figured out your weakest link to then become a strength, right? So how do we go about finding those moments? And I think that everybody should understand that we all have these moments. And I don't care if that skier that you described in the lead up here, who, you know, had massive success all the way through, that person still had smaller,
for sure,
light bulb moments that they needed to have. But they also, I will promise you this, they will have a moment later on that they have a huge issue with, that they have to then work through and become to evolve to that next level, to the next level. So, you know, I mean, obviously we are big proponents of seeing and working with coaches or listening to our podcast and figuring out how to make that the most effective thing into your skiing. But we're always going to have these moments, and we have to just embrace them and really use the mirror and look at yourself and understand, like, none of us are perfect. I'm not perfect. And you're not perfect. And let's all just let's put the work in to get to where we want to go. Right. So,
yeah,
I mean, Trent, you had the same thing. I mean, well, first off, going back to me real quick, I had a lot of success. I had blind success when I was really young, you know, leading up to like 12. I didn't know. We were just water skiing for fun. I mean, we literally were just skiing. We'd ski our local tournaments. We didn't have any exposure outside of our smallest bubble of Vermont, maybe New Hampshire. You know what I mean? Like, we were just, you know, having fun, and tournaments were a thing. And then, I mean, in my case, we just happened to cross paths with some skiers that, that were from Florida, and I grew up in Vermont, for those of you that didn't know. So, I mean, you're talking like the smallest pocket of skiing there could be. I could have lived my whole career there and never skied a tournament and been a great skier and never known it. You know what I mean? Like, we just didn't have that kind of exposure. So I got lucky and somebody saw me skiing and told my father that, like, hey, this guy's actually, like, we see a lot of kids and he's legit good. And so, you know, I was like, oh, well, we should probably start skiing tournaments. And I happened to go and win a national championship. So
no way.
Of course, yeah. Pretty cool. Like, whoa.
I didn't know that. What I mean? So you won a junior national title.
I won junior boys in 1989.
Wow. Wow.
And I was 10th seed going into the tournament. You know, I finished third at regionals. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I never expected to go in and win. It just happened to be my day, my time, everything lined up, the moon was right, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, I just went out and did what I did every single day in practice, and that turned out to be enough to win a national championship. And I would say 0% chance that I actually envisioned that was going to happen. I just knew that I needed to go and take care of my business. And however the cards laid, if I had finished 10th in the country, I would have been stoked, and I finished first. Now, moving on from that, wow. Then you're like, oh, well, I'm going to win every year. And, you know, I'll go right to the punchline. That didn't happen. And I had a lot more work to do. And so anyway, lots of roadblocks along the way. I didn't win another national championship until 2009.
Ha!
89, so, 2009. Took me that long to get back to winning another national championship. See, now, that being so said, go ahead.
excuse me, I'm just going to interject. Like, so there is, like, case in point to this whole conversation, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so you had 20 years between your first and your second national title.
That is 100% correct.
So if that isn't enough for people to be like, hey, like, chill out a little bit, as long as you're working, as long as you're learning, as long as you're improving your craft, like, the end result is going to come. That's fascinating. I love that.
It's wild. It's wild. So, you know, so I think maybe you got to be on this journey for yourself. Everything, I mean, to be a national champion, if we're going to that place, yes, you've got to do the work. You've got to go through all the progression, and everything has to line up. I mean, I have a ton of, you know, silver medal at national championships, bronze medals at national champ. It's not like I wasn't in the game the whole time. But there were the year after I won nationals, I went from junior boys to boys. That was not a good jump for me. 36 miles an hour was not good to me. you know, I was also dealing with, like, I got sponsored. I changed skis. I had different expectations on myself. There were all these things that I wasn't prepared for at that moment that all, you know, And then just that thought that, like, oh, well, I'm national champion, so I guess I'll just be doing this for here on out. And, and that did not happen. So Trent, so where do we go from here? Like, how do we, you know, what is there different levels?
Well,
how do we get into this?
Well, I think, like, what might be interesting, and then, you know, cause it'll resonate with different skiers is, like, what do you, when you look back on the progression of things, and there's probably, you know, there'll be 30 of them, but, like, just one or two, like, key sort of like light bulb moments. Like when you figured something out, then you're like immediately, oh, okay, now I'm going to start to see like this, you're climbing and then you plateau and then you see this one light and then, you know, for the next, whatever it is, 12 months, 6 months, now you start to see that gradual improvement again. Like what do you recall like what some of those specific markers were and like what you realized and then what that sort of unlocked for you?
So I'll speak of one that's it's medium to high level, but mm-hmm. I think that it a medium to high level light bulb that went off for me that seemed so dumb when I thought about it afterwards when I had the light bulb moment, and that one was when I was trying to go from like 35 off becomes this pretty difficult pass, I think, for me. Like that 35 to 38 off kind of jump for me was a long time coming. Like it wasn't a 1 year progression, it wasn't a 3 year progression, it was, you know, the better part of 5 to 10 years is what I would say on that one, you know, like before the light bulb really went off. And for me, you know, that light bulb moment that changed everything for me was understanding that the length of the rope that I'm riding is about the same width as the buoy. So for mm-hmm. every time before that moment, you know, for 32 off and before, I was able to ski out wider than the buoy, see myself wider than the buoy, and then feel really comfortable to attack my turns. And all of a sudden I had this light bulb moment when I was struggling through running these passes of why I just kept trying to get wider. I wasn't wide enough. And then I had this light bulb moment. Like I was like, oh, hey guy, you actually cannot see outside that buoy line at all, ever at this line length, because you're already at that, like at full extension, that rope will not put you there. And perfect. So I think like,
and that starts at 35 off, right?
For me, if you want to really look at it, there's 3 feet of more space there that you can get at 90 degrees. But the reality is when you're running 35 off and not running beyond that, like 39, 41, like until you're running that kind of stuff, you're not riding any kind of ability to be on a wide line at 35 off. So why does everyone get stuck at 1, 2 at 35 and off?
Yes. Perfect. Yes. Cause this is probably, this one affects a lot of people. Like where all of a sudden it's like the get in their mind, cause if you don't have if you're not running much harder passes, if you don't have a broad understanding of how this works, 35 is the one where you're just like, the whole game just changed on me. How did you conquer that then? Like you're saying all of a sudden you accepted the fact that you're not going to see outside of the buoy, and you stopped trying to get so wide. So then what light bulb went off? Like how did your approach change?
I think that, you know, what I just knowing that I could not get myself there, knowing that I could not ski that high, wide line any longer, then I started to focus on, I actually started focusing on vision. You know, like, what am I seeing? Okay. Why am I seeing it? Understanding that no matter how hard I pull through the gates, I cannot get wide. That's what was killing me. So that was the most important thing, right? Like to have that light bulb go off that I cannot be seeing the course from outside of the buoy line any longer. So mm-hmm. I must shift how I do things, because what was happening was I would just keep trying to pull harder. I just kept trying to pull harder because I wanted to get wider. This leads into another light bulb right there. Like that's a light bulb right there. You know, so I mean, I'm not going to talk about that right now, but maybe we'll talk about that later in the episode, or maybe we'll talk about that in a future one. But so not being able to just understanding that and that pulling harder will not lead me to that place. So then what did I do? I started to work on my vision and understand that my body follows my vision, but I need to see and trust that my vision is going to stay inside the buoy line. So then instead of, I don't know how to explain this. Like I kept wanting to see this looking from the outside in at the buoy, cause I had been so used to seeing that. And then now I had to realize that my vision will never go outside that buoy line, and that I have to trust that my feet will go outside that buoy line. And then I think that that was just a game that I had to play in my mind. I wasn't staring at my ski, making sure it goes around the buoy. I had to like come in, see where the buoy was, and then know that when I extend my reach, yeah, and push, you know, allow the ski to go away from me, that there was a 3 to 5 foot, you know, depending on how much I let it go, there's this big reach zone there. And I had to build trust that that was going to be enough to get around the buoy. And then, you know, obviously just building trust, I think in general is a huge thing that we have to work on. So I don't know. I don't think I have a specific thing. Do you have something that maybe you would add to that? I'm more of a field skier, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Let me ask you this then. And just in keeping with this, you know, jump, because really the jump to 35 and 38 are kind of similar, you know, because they're both that one where all of a sudden, like you're saying, the vision is completely different. Mm-hmm. So for like yourself or that skier who's trying to figure out why 35 is feeling so different in your, so when you were attempting just to get too wide or, you know, trying to see the outside, like, so what is happening? Like you said, you were going really hard in the gates to try and find that width. So what is the breakdown through that approach then?
The harder that I went, the harder that I tried, what would happen is I'd be like, all right, I need to get a better gait. I need to be stronger. I need to be, I obviously I'm not getting to where I need to get to going into one to be able to run 35 off. So I'm going to go harder because clearly I need to get more width. I need more width. Yeah. And so what would happen is I would overload myself or go max load into the gate, into the whatever, right-hand gate ball, center line, whatever you want to call that. And then I would stand up, I would lose line tension, and I would feel like I was going 150 miles an hour at buoy one. And then I don't have rope to turn, but I know I need to turn, and I feel super narrow, like more narrow than I should. And then I would have to just slam on the brakes, rock on the back of the ski, rotate my upper body just to get back to the handle. But now I have slack, I have a delay acceleration. There's a huge slack hit, and now I'm pulling my brains out all the way to two, slack line again, can't complete. So, and that actually isn't very far off for every line length that we eventually learn, but, but at 35, it's just like, you get to this place where you bang your head against the wall 5 million times. I mean, I did that. I literally tried everything. And, so this concept of seeing not the vision changing because of physical parameters, light bulb number one, right? Then number two, somebody said, Steve Schnitzer told me something that just blew my mind. And I hadn't even thought of it this way. I probably mentioned it before, but this is something that's really important. If you at 39 off with your handle attached to the rope at 90 degrees, does that go around the buoy?
No.
Okay. So if I pull, like if I'm out on my gate, Trent, and I drop into my gates and I pull all the way to buoy one at 39 off, do I make buoy one?
Excuse me. No chance.
Think about it. If the handle comes up a foot and a half short at 90 degrees and I'm still pulling, if I'm pulling, the ski is on the inside of the handle. I'm going to go way inside the buoy. So again, this is just two things, like those two concepts right there, that's what I was actually alluding to earlier. So I just went back to my punchline, but, those two thoughts right there I had to have big mind opening idea, like, okay, pulling longer and harder doesn't get me there. So what does get me there? Right. So I don't know how to finish those thoughts off in a nice shiny bow, but I mean,
no, that's perfect. Cause like that is a huge roadblock. And so if you just look at like competitive skiers, I mean, that one probably corners 80% of competitive skiers, right? Where it's just like, like the, what I'm doing no longer works given the parameter of you know, of the task, the rope and the distance between the buoys. So then we'll go to this, the next step then. So when you were able to let go, or you were introduced to the idea of, okay, blowing harder, longer, that's not going to get me wider. A and B, I don't need to try to get wider. I'm going to, you know, basically let my speed and direction result in my ultimate width. What did that allow you to do then? Meaning like, so the other way was causing you to separate and straight line into the buoy. So if you were like, okay, I'm going to embrace this idea of just speed and direction into the wakes, not going to go longer, not going to go necessarily harder. So what now what does that open up for you?
Well, I mean, all of a sudden you're riding a completely different line. Now, the only thing that I have to back up just slightly for to that was in order to bring those two concepts that we just talked about, that I just talked about, you know, as far as like things that I can, light bulb moments that I can remember, is, and Schnitz unlocked this door for me too, was you have to feel confident enough to be able to trust what you're doing. And so a lot of times, like when I was a coach, I would need to back up on my line lengths, or for me, like 35 off, I had to slow the boat down to be able to process at those speeds and to be able to, it's all about building trust, right? Like you got to have in the way I look at it, you have to see it in your mind first, right? Like you've got to be able to understand what you want to be doing or what you should be doing. And then we have to find a way to set ourselves up to be able to feel confident enough to do those things. And then we start the process of repeat, 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 repeat until it is part of our whatever ethos or core deal. So, you know, Schnitz asked me something really simple. He goes, okay, well, let's say this one's for 38 off, because he helped me to run, you know, 38 off more consistently, but or to actually learn to run it. And that actually made my 35 off way better. Is he asked me at the end of the lake, he's like, all right, if I go 35.5, will you run 38? And I said, nope. I said, maybe. He goes, I don't want maybe. He goes, maybe is not good enough. And then I said, he goes, if I go 35, will you run it? I said, probably. He goes, I don't want probably. I need yes. He goes, if I go 34, are you going to run 38? And I said, oh yeah, I'm running that. He's like, well, then that's what we're going. And then I went out there and it felt slow. And for all of you people, you know, who say when you go slower, you dig bigger holes out of the turn and it just doesn't feel this. Yeah, guess what? I did all of that. And I dug holes and I hammered all the way through it, and it wasn't pretty. And I didn't do everything I wanted to do, but at least I made six. And then guess what? Yeah. I just started doing it over and over again. And as I became more confident in the fact that I was going to run it, then I could start to process what I actually wanted to be doing. And it was like the whole game slowed down again, and I could understand what I was trying to do. And then I was able to implement, trust the earlier edge changes, trust riding my speed and direction out to the buoy, trust that I didn't need to see it from that outside in look, trust, you know. So anyway, that's like my three nuggets of success right there. And for me, I think I can relate those nuggets, you know, not seeing the buoy from inside out, you know, pulling longer does not make me wider, you know, and then being able to set myself up to be 100% confident at whatever speed or line length that I'm going to go, that I can work on things and not just hammer. And I think that those three things in combination are a really good broad, like really broad spectrum idea of what helped me to make a significant jump in my skiing. And I had been on a plateau for a very long time. I mean, at least 7 years of plateau.
See, yes. Yeah. And I think that, like, that message right there is just, it's really important to be heard. Cause it's not like you're saying, you know, I got stuck at 41 for 7 years. Like you're, you know, one of the best, you know, best skiers of all time. You were stuck there for, you know, a significant period of time and were able to break through. So, I mean, I guess how important is it to have an open mind, right?
Oh, I mean, it's why you're presented, if we want to call it a problem. It's why you're presented the problem in the first place, right? Like, you need to evolve. You haven't evolved past a certain crux moment. And, you know, I guess another thought in my mind is, and I want to get, I'm talking the whole time here, so I want to ask you some questions on this, but, so I think that we're all presented these moments and we just have to look deep. And then the other thing is, sometimes you may have to take a slight step backwards to take a lot of steps forward.
Yeah,
meaning,
for sure,
what got you to where you are today? Some of those major staples might not be the staple to get you past the next level. Yeah. You might need to not add. You might need to take away some things. So anyway,
yes, that I love that, because that's something I encounter, and it's something I use a lot in my coaching. In that, I'm not asking you to do, this should be simple, because I'm not asking you to do something. I'm asking you actually just to take this one component away. You know what I mean? Stripping it down. So last question on this, this subtopic. During those 7 years, in reflection now, during those 7 years, you know, and saying like your scores were remaining, you know, and I'm assuming, so we'll just say for argument, your scores were staying fairly static. Mm-hmm. In reflection, were you improving?
I was improving at doing. Yeah. Whoa, that's a loaded question there, Trent. I would say yes in some ways. Mm-hmm. I was definitely improving, because I was on the journey. Like, you can't have the light bulb go off if you haven't banged your head against the wall enough. So even though I had banged my head against the wall to the point of, you know, recognizing the cliche, what's the definition of insanity, right? Like, that statement, right? So I had done that. I knew I needed something. And here's a, you know, this is not a knock, but I didn't have the tools to unlock what was next, like that.
Yeah.
So I was banging my head against the wall. And if you bang your head against the wall enough, sometimes the wall breaks and you go through, and then you're moving on. But there can be a lot of times where you just keep doing the same motion, expecting a different result, and it's not going to happen. So
yeah,
I needed something to happen that was different, you know. And for me, you know, I had been in college. I skied with a lot of great college skiers. And you know, I was stuck, man. And I needed something different. And, you know, Steve Schnitzer is the one that working with him, I actually went and interned with him, and, you know, I did a lot of actual work with him, not just on the water. And so, you know, he was able to get me to see what I couldn't see, and then bam, light bulb, you know, light bulb moment. And that's the light bulb moment that I'm sharing in retrospect, you know, in hindsight. It was a huge, huge stepping block for me. So
yeah. And what year roughly do you think that, I mean, give or take, what year would that have been?
Oh, it's not hard to find. You can see it. You can see it if you go back on the world standings list. I mean, I think in 2008. No, sorry, 1998 or 99, somewhere in that range. Wade Williams one time called it out. I wasn't aware of it. He was working for me at the time, and he was like, "What happened in 1998?"
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Bro, you went from 237th in the world to ninth."
Yep.
He goes, "You went 237 to 35th to ninth in a 2-year run."
So exactly right. So there, like, there was all this work, like, leading up and stuck and stuck and stuck, and then, like, this is exactly what this is. I didn't know you had such a good example of this topic, because then you cracked that dam, and then boom, in 2 years, you're top 10 in the world. Boom. Another couple of years later, you're winning events on the cover of magazine. So as long as you're like seeking input, as long as you're exploring, you're improving, you know, it's as long as you're putting in the work, you're improving. As long as you're putting in the correct work, you're improving. So static, because I just have people that, you know, they'll have static scores for 6 months and they freak out. I'm like, no. Like, you know, what do I do? I'm like, you're doing it. You're doing it. This is going to work. You know, if you're seeking the right input and you're putting in the correct work, like, again, because slalom is such a quantitative sport, like, you know, it's so, you can measure it to the, you know, down to the hundredth of a second, every single practice session. Mm-hmm. As long as you're improving, as long as you're putting the right work, you are improving, even if, you know, your scores, man, remain static for 7 years until you broke through into the, you know, that 99th percentile of the professional elite.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in 2001, two or three, somewhere in that range, I had people coming up to me and saying, what are you doing? And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, your scores are down. And I'm like, I know. And they're like, well, I think you should go back to what you were doing. And I said, no, I know my scores are down because I'm working through some stuff right now that I know when I work through it, I'm going to come out with a higher upside. It takes a little while to, you know, I'm thinking of like Tiger Woods, I'm sure works on his golf swing, you know, and sometimes when you work on your golf swing, you lose a little confidence in the every time you're going to do it. But you know that as you learn the repetition and it becomes more of your go-to swing, that you're going to then have a better swing, better contact, more accuracy, more repeatability, things like that. So anyway, that's what I meant by when I said, you know, sometimes you've got to take a little step back to go many steps forward too. Like you've got to learn, you've got to trust in the process. And I think that's a really big deal. So I've talked a lot right here. I've talked a lot.
Well, okay, and that's because right from the start, I said like, this is the most underutilized component of this dichotomy of you and I in this podcast is you know, that you did, like, you got better, then you pause, and then all of a sudden, you know, like your example of Wade Williams pointing out, all of a sudden it's like the floodgates opened. And I think people need to realize that, like, you know, and again, as long as you're seeking the right input and you're expanding the way you think about things and you're putting in the work, you're improving. You're not always going to see these scores are not always going to jump up every 6 months. And if you're that skier that's been stuck at whatever, you know, 3 of 35 for the last 10 years, that does not mean that you should expect to that you should not expect to improve as long as you're putting in, you know, the right work.
I mean, you couldn't have nailed that any better. And it's really important for people to hear what you just said. I mean, my favorite example is my friend Jack. He and I skied together for a long time. He's like a grandfather to me. You know, we started skiing together when he was, you know, I don't know, younger. But we had skied together for a very long time. And at 74 mm-hmm. years old, he ran his personal best that he'd ever run in his life. And why did that happen? That happened because we worked together. We built trust. We worked on our weaknesses. And, you know, he was just really focused on skiing better. And then the buoys came, right? Like he just really was on that path that I wanted to be on as well. And that I've always strived to be on and not be so defined by the buoy, but be defined by the process. You know, and so we built his trust up, we built everything up, and boom, like personal best in a lifetime at 74. That right there tells you that don't ever stop. Don't ever think that, like, man, I'm not even going to lie. Like I still feel the same way. Like I'm striving to be better. Sure. Probably physically I have to admit that I am not going to quite be as peak possible you know, at the age that I am right now versus, you know, 15 years ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that I can't get better. Like yeah. that I can't, that there isn't possibility for me to run more buoys. Like I'm expecting to run more buoys this year than I ran last year. And to do that, I need to put the work in.
Yeah.
So Trent, do you have, so I brought up some things. I mean, you have had a very storied career and you've been able to take your career and keep building on it to the point of a world championship medal, standing on top of that podium, standing on top of the world. So, you know, you had some breakthrough moments, and sometimes we have breakthrough moments at later or different times in our careers. So
for sure,
you know, for you, do you have some thoughts, you know, looking way back in your career, looking back, I know you had you have a pretty significant, reframing of how you look at things in the past, what is it, like 10 or 15 years or
yeah,
I don't know exactly when that is, but like what are some of the things that you've seen or done or you've noticed in your coaching or whatever, like what are some big moments that you can point out?
Well, and I have, you know, my trajectory, you know, probably similar to yours, but actually it was like even far slower to develop, you know. Like I never had even a medal at nationals until I won my first national title in 1999. Like I won open men's slalom at Canadian nationals. Up to that point, I mean, I've been going to nationals since I was 10 years old, 9 years old. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. You know, like I'd been to whatever, 15 of them before without ever even coming close to being to podiuming or getting a medal until I won an open title. So, you know, my trajectory was, I mean, when I was 20, there was no reason for me to think that I would ever, you know, ski professionally or anything like that. But, you know, but for me, the biggest light bulb when, you know, because I was stuck, and I'm just going to go to the far end, like towards the end of my career. I mean, I skied 2 at 41 for years and years and years and years and years without, you know, and we were kind of trained to do that in a way. Because if you ran 2 at 41, you were just going to make the cut, you know, back then. So I just sort of had a two buoy course in my mind. So until I started thinking about, you know, and we'll talk about this in upcoming episodes, but when I started being accountable for my relationship with the boat, what the boat was doing or what I was doing in relation to the boat at all aspects of the course, and then obviously how important a gate setup is to establish the correct relationship, you know, and that's why, you know, again, when I'm coaching, and I know you're similar too, you know, your gates don't need to be perfect and your gates don't need to be anything specific other than establishing the right relationship with the boat. You know, and for me, that's when all of a sudden a 2 buoy course became a 3 buoy course, became a 4 buoy course, became a 6 buoy course. And that happened in, you know, where I would have been stuck at 2 ball from 2006 until 2012, 6 years of running the same score over and over and over and over. Actually 8 years until 2014 until I, you know, started getting threes and fours. And it was just that I was putting in the work, you know, I mean, I couldn't have been in better shape. I couldn't have been skiing anymore. I was skiing with I mean, a lot of different people, and it was just that idea of, okay, this has to be different, because it was similar to your example. You know, I'm just like pulling harder and moving faster isn't getting me anywhere. I'm going to get 2 ball every single time, but it was understanding, you know, what the disparity of speed between me and the boat at all times. You know, what is my relationship as I enter the first wake, what's my relationship as I leave the wake, what's my relationship as I approach apex, you know, as developing that sense of always knowing what the boat is doing in relation to me, like when am I slowing down to match the boat speed? At what rate is my deceleration? So now the boat's moving faster than me, seeing that, and then ultimately sensing that changed everything. And that's, you know, that's something we'll discuss in the next couple episodes for sure when we go onto a gate tangent.
Hey, gate tangents are always fun. I think awareness is something that is really key. And, you know, when you're having these breakthrough moments, sometimes before you have those moments, I think a lot of times we have tunnel vision and mm-hmm, we're just, sure. It's just hammer, 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 hammer. And when you think about it at the end of a pass, you know, I want to have seen the lake. I know when somebody is walking onto their dock while I'm skiing, like I see that motion. I see, you know, my global awareness is quite open. And a lot of times we have global awareness is really just gets so focused in on something so small that we're missing the big picture. And I think that's one of the things that helps to have a breakthrough is to start seeing things from a bigger picture. When you talk about your relationship to the boat, do you, when you're coaching people now, are there ways that you, or small things that you can do, or things that you find yourself consistently saying to your students to get them to start to understand that deal?
Yeah.
Do you have go-tos?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Like for me, like you learn that, you learn that on a superior gate setup, you know, because there's, peripherally, because there's less going on, it's a slower rate than everything else in the course. Peripherally, you should be able to see the boat, and you should be able to see the line between you and the boat, meaning the rope. Because someone had said to me last year coaching, you know, because we're talking about glide speed as you enter the turn, and he had said, he said it kind of tongue in cheek, but he's like, oh man, I wish I had a GPS that would tell me how fast I'm going. And I was just bingo. I was like, you do have a GPS and it's set at 34.2 miles an hour and it's on the screen in front of me. So if you're accountable for where you are in relation to the boat, you always know exactly how fast you're going. You know, as you pull out for the gate and you come up into the glide, peripherally, you can see that line between you and the pylon, that angle is climbing. Mm-hmm. That tells you you're going faster than the boat. And as that climb and as that angle, you know, as that angle swings up on the boat and that climb, as it starts to slow down, you know that you're starting to approach that, we'll say 34.2 mile an hour. And for that brief moment where it's static, where you're not climbing, but contrarily, the boat isn't climbing back away from you, you're going 34.2 miles an hour. You know how fast you're going as long as you're accountable for it. And again, it's not staring at the pylon, it's not staring at the rope, but peripherally you really need to be able to see that. And then similarly, and you just said that global awareness starts to grow when I'm coming up into one ball. Peripherally, I see the line of the ropes advance on the boat. As I hit apex, I see this brief pause, and then, you know, the next millisecond later, I see that angle starting to fall. And if you know the rate at which that's happening, you're never caught off guard. You know, you come in on a flat line, straight line, and you're forced to go to your tail to slow your ski down to try and make that turn before you get too far down course. I mean, you're going to see that angle change rapidly. You're going to know the boat's about to get on you. You're going to know that, oop, I better open up and close my hip off on this because this thing's about to pick me up and it's about to pick me up quickly. You should, you know, as you develop that sense, you just never get caught off guard. And for me, that was the final thing, you know, like, you know, if I look back when I was a kid, it was the first time I learned how to lean with structural alignment. I was like, holy, I'm going 1,000 miles an hour. And then, you know, in the midway through my progression, the late 90s, it was learning how, you know, there was a kind of a swing component from center line to apex that I learned from working with jump coaches, with Ray Stokes, like really, you know, if I kept structural alignment as I left center line, I'm going to swing from A to B on a faster, more direct line instead of straight lining at the buoy. And then then the final one was this kind of global awareness. But I think the thing is, and your example was perfect. I mean, there would have been like years and years and years where it would have been, it would have been crazy to think like, man, I'm not getting any better, but that's just, you know, it's, I think that, and that's the point of this episode is if you're seeking the right input and if you're expanding the way you look at things, and if you are putting in the work, stop expecting that you're not going to get better, because too many people just, you know, they settle for where they're at. And like you said, because they don't do anything different and because they just approach it in the exact same manner, because it's given them, you know, a reasonable level of success up until now, boom, they just end up being stagnant forever.
Don't be held back by, you know, fear of losing. You know, that fear that, oh, I want to get back to the last year, or, oh, you know, guess what? We're on this lifelong journey here, hopefully, that we're going to ski forever. And we need to expect and want to expect. And I want to work with people that want and know that they can get better. And, you know, I think a good thought is, you know, work smarter, not harder. But there is a component of working hard too that's in there. But, you know, you've got to be willing to take a real honest look at who you are, where you are, really try to see what's holding you back. You know, if you're trying to run 35 off and you can see yourself behind the boat with your hips not, you know, in line, like what Trent's a real big proponent of, you know, just having your stance and structure right, you know, then we need to take a look at how do we fix that? Like, everybody has something that can help them to break through to that next level. But sometimes you also have to be willing to let go of that and, you know, let go of something that you have foundationally had in your skiing and just say, you know what, I've got to let go of that. That's not helping me. And I have to be honest with myself and say, this is where I want to go. And I'm going to commit to going there and I'm going to get there no matter what. And I've gone down many, many, many paths. I look at it like a tree of life, right? You go down one trunk, then you go down, a branch, and then you go out a twig, and then that twig ends, and you're like, wait a second. And then you back up 5 feet, and you go down the next one, and you're like, oh man, I made it further, but I'm still not high enough. I better back way up down to the trunk again and go up this tall center one. And there I am. Now I'm to a new place, and I'm having new success, and I'm pumped. And that breakthrough, those breakthrough moments are what pump me up to do a podcast like this. It's what pumps me up to go to the lake. It's what fires me up to ski with other people and to coach others. I mean, it's so much more fun to work with others because I can make them make that jump pretty quick because we see where we know all of these moments. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So there, don't ever give up. Don't ever think you're at the end. This is you, the possibilities are endless, and you just got to keep striving for what's next.